Hello, welcome to the Dr. Death Danger Radio Show. Enjoy.
And welcome back to the Dr. Death Danger Radio Show. It's with your boys? I didn't even try, dude. I'm fucking up hard right now.
No, it's okay. It's great.
We're kind of at a crunch going in.
Live
television. Because I've been making it hanging too hard for just us broing down.
No,
but we're back today.
Yes.
To review episode three of Rock of Love,
Season 2.
Titled
Stroller Derby.
But before we go into fucking Bret Michaels and his weird ass fucking shit.
Weird shit.
Ed, my dude, was good.
Oh, you know what's good? Fucking new Napalm Death, homie.
Oh, fuck.
Throws
Yo!
In the... Something throws in the throes of fucking... I don't even know. It's a long ass title, but it's a good ass album.
Yo, check it. So I wasn't sure about this release because the singles, they've been kind of going more of a Killing Joke post-punk route.
I've noticed that.
And it's like, I got
so many weird vibes. I'm listening to this record. There's times with this, it's like, you ever listen to any of like Entombed's Death and Roll stuff, like Uprising from like 2002 or whatever? I got vibes of like, There were times where I'm like, it reminds me of that. There's like weird things and stuff. I mean, Apex Predator was a weird album too.
But this one's really experimental. Here's the thing. Apex Predator might have been weird, but I feel like it's Napalm at the time. Coming off like what? Utilitarian,
which is great.
But like less experimental, more just kind of straightforward on the grind and stuff.
Throes of joy in the jaws of defeatism.
Here's the thing. With the singles that were like coming out, you can kind of tell. It's like, you know what? This is going to be more of a post-punk Napalm. Either if you're down with it, because if you want like older, just straight feisty grindcore, it's not here.
Backlash Just Because was an all right single. I actually liked Amoral. I liked Amoral just because it just felt like such like a pure punk song from them to me.
Here's the thing, but I might think, if you ask me, not gonna lie, I think it's better than Apex Predator by a little bit.
Dude, I was thinking that too.
It's just like I listened through once and I'm like, fuck, dude, it's kinda like you remember saw individual songs more.
Yeah.
Like Apex Predator is a good fucking album and it's able to flow
well.
You
can listen to that. You can listen to
that. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
This has more characters with the songs where it's like you can kind of like remember listening through like each different song.
You can, Apex Predator's really good if you really like, which, I mean, who doesn't? But Apex Predator's really good if you like Scum and Enslavement to Obliteration. It's not so much about specific songs. You just throw it on and listen to the whole thing because it's one cohesive thing. Utilitarian and Defeatism, I'm just going to call it Defeatism. You feel like the songs have like their own identity and stuff. I don't know what it was. I was listening to the album. The first five songs, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, there's coolness. But then I got to Invigorating Clutch track 6, where it's like the one where it's like dan 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 dan, and I'm just like, oh, this album picked up, and then, you know, finished the album, and then I listened to it again, and I'm like, I don't know what it was. This shit hit way different on the second listen.
Here's the thing, like this album's like that good where it's like, dude, I can listen to this bad boy again.
Yeah.
Apex Predator was good, but like on this one, it hit me more. But it's gonna feel like it's definitely gonna be controversial.
It's such a different record. It's so experimental.
But it's just more like, here's the thing, it's just more like, it's just Napalm Death being post-punk.
There's post-punk, there's death metal, there's like tiny black metal codas.
But that could also go into the post-punk thing.
Yeah.
Shoegaze, fucking like Sonic Youth, Killing Joke.
Yep.
So here's the thing.
Which Killing Joke's a good band.
Here's the thing. With those, like, if you can understand those bands or find listening to those bands, you can understand what Napalm's doing here.
It's weird. There's so much stuff. It's like they threw in their death metal influences, punk and post-punk. There's grind.
Napalm, the band itself and those members are like so OG.
Oh, yeah. Like,
to all those things.
I mean, Barney Greenway alone, he was in Benediction. He was in Extreme Noise Terror for a bit. Mitch Harris has a big fucking background with stuff. Shane Embry, I guess, is the only one you could say that really stuck with grime. But all four of the guys in there have expanded their shit, you know? So, I don't know. I liked it.
And that's
I liked
the
it a
thing.
Lot.
Napalm Death in its earliest stage was a fucking post-punk band trying to rip off like a post-punk, but also trying to rip off Amoebix.
Yeah.
Before they fucking listened to some fucking Siege and then got like feisty.
They listened to Siege.
They listened to Siege and most likely listened to Repulsion demo tapes floating around.
Was Celtic Frost out at that point?
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, they probably heard. I feel like they listened to that too.
Because fucking Hellhammer.
Hellhammer, yeah, yeah.
But even then, that's just fucking them.
That tape was influential.
And that's just them trying to fucking. Hellhammer was just ripping off Venom.
Yeah.
And you know, it's another fucking UK band that was like pretty like floating around in that same Napalm Death scene.
I know what you're going to say.
What?
Well, no, I was waiting for you to say it.
Sacrilege?
Sacrilege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, literally, Sacrilege is a band that saw that one shitty fucking Venom show that's on my tape. Whereas, like, they're playing so bad and sloppy, but it was like, dude, fuck, this is so good.
That's why
we'll start
like,
a band.
That's why I feel like even though
also
the album's,
doing Discharge.
That's why I feel like even though the album's like really different, I feel like it flows because death metal and grind and like the teeny tiny bits of black metal, even the tiniest bit of thrash on that song Contagion, they're all cousins to each other because they all have early death metal. They all have roots in punk rock, and Napalm Death to me, I mean. To me, at their core, they're a punk band that sound like metal. You know, it's not like with Nails, right? Where Todd Jones tries to be like, we're a punk band. It's like, bro, come on. You know, you've made some metal songs. Napalm Death is a punk band that sounds like a metal band at times. Yeah. But yeah, no, I love that record. I love this record,
dude. I'm so even with the
I
weird.
I didn't like
slow-
waiting 5 years for it.
Was it 5 or 7?
No, it was 5 years. Apex Predator came out in 2015. I remember when you and I put that on.
Dude,
we were driving
like,
up through Kachuma
like,
Pass.
I feel like 5 years, though, you can definitely tell the direction.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, here's
they
the thing.
They kept getting put back, too, because Mitch Harris had like health and family issues the last few years.
And here's the thing. It kind of feels different, but in a way that feels organic for Napalm Death.
And Barney Greenway, like, he does different vocal things, too.
Yeah. He's Barney Greenway, that sexy bastard.
He's a fucking good looking man. He doesn't look 50. He was born in 1969.
And you know who isn't? Who but people think is a good looking bastard? This asshole Bret Michaels. All right. We can continue talking about Napalm Death.
Everyone go out really quick. Speaking just killing joke for a second. Either listen to like their first four albums or by Death and Resurrection Show from 2001
See,
with Dave Grohl on drums. That's good shit.
I listened to that 85 record.
That's
that has,
a good one too.
Dude, oh, that's a good
throw
record.
Throw Death and Resurrection Show though from like 2001. That's a good one.
You want me to go into their industrial?
Well, there's industrial bits, but it's really well. Without going on too long, there's industrial sure, but there's a lot of post-punk hard rock stuff too. But it's actually very punky.
Well,
Death and Resurrection
fucking,
Show.
Isn't that what Killing Joke is?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Dave Grohl's on the drums for that. And hey, Dave Grohl's actually a good drummer. He just wants to be a rock star and be up front. But speaking of which, of up front rockman.
Yes, Dave Grohl is a good drummer.
Yes.
And like
he's a better drummer, guitarist, everything than Bret Michaels.
Compared to Bret Michaels, he's like 10 times talent and he's not even doing anything crazy.
Yeah, he's just
and here's the
making
thing.
Rock and roll.
Unlike Bret Michaels, Dave Grohl wants to jam other fucking types of music.
Yes.
Not just weird the sad boy butt rock bullshit.
But James, every rose has its thorns. Don't you know that every rose has its thorns?
Yeah, I guess his heart was broken. Because he was going to try to marry a stripper.
And it wasn't Heather.
It was not Heather.
Okay, everybody. So, episode three.
Stroller Derby.
Hold on. God damn it. I'm trying to focus on reviewing this shitty show, but all I've got are Napalm Death riffs in my head. You know that one they always do with the fast parts where it's like... They use it like at least twice every album. You know the part.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's friggin' like... So
there's a recap. then everybody wakes up.
So yeah, it's basically, it's just highlights of the last episode of like the Peep Show Challenge. A focus on Amber.
Yeah.
Because as like, at first she was going to be eliminated first episode, but out of luck she makes it.
Yes.
Then she has a fun present unwrapping gimmick for the Peep Show. And she has a pretty solid date with, has a solid solo time with Brett.
And according to Brett, she's a dope kisser.
There's also like the dance contest where there was some VIP gimmick passes.
Yeah.
And then also like shots of Sarah from last episode being axed. All right, yes. Edward, sing the fucking theme.
Hey, show you things you've never seen. Touch my backstage ass. Ride my cockozine. Please let me be your really bad choice for a romantic partner.
All right, it's morning. And the ladies are doing their routine.
Everyone's waking up.
And Roxy, at first, is kind of being concerned because she hasn't had a real chance to talk to Brett.
Yeah.
But she has a VIP pass. And like, someone reiterates that.
Yes.
But she doesn't know when, she isn't unsure when to use it.
Yes.
Because that's like one good golden chance. And she feels like she wants to win a challenge first. Where she can have like a small chance to get to know him better, and then use the pass on like a little bit more private downtime.
Yes, which would have been a good strategy. But
so, morning, ladies, Big John.
Yeah, Big John. He's fucking like, ladies, can I get all of you into the living room, please?
Ladies, so
which I did transcribe the poem.
All right, you ready?
No. Good morning, my sexy sirens.
I know you're all sweet and classy,
but I need a girl who's tough and sassy.
One who's willing to push and shove.
Roll with the punches and protect our love. Oh my God.
Megan was the one to read it, and then she tells us in her fucking inset
she
promo,
says she hopes there isn't anything athletic involved because she has none.
No,
that's what she said. She said, I hope there's no athleticism because I have none.
But I guess she's hot.
She's a good looker.
Yeah.
So they go to a fucking roller derby ring.
So, well, yeah, they hop in the fucking limo. Roller derby rink, and they're like, oh shit, there's a roller derby rink. So then Brett's there.
Brett tells them, he rolls up, he says, and I laughed at this, Brett says, now there's one thing I am good at, and that's being a good dad.
And I wrote down, it's like, here's the thing. I'm sure Brett
thinks he's a good dad.
Is not like this to his freaking daughters.
He fucking better not be.
I hope the fucking God he's not.
So then,
like, I hope to God when it comes to his daughters, he isn't acting like this goony motherfucker on the show.
I feel like Brett.
But it could be the show itself.
I feel like Brett's like that classic, like, is he a boomer? Is he Gen X? Well, whatever. I feel like
Gen X.
Yeah, I feel like Brett's that classic, like, hard ass or party or whatever, where he's like, oh yeah, woo, but around his daughters he's just total teddy bear. That's
total
my
teddy
headcanon.
Bear wants the best for his daughters, yes, and actually pays attention.
Like, I'm sure he put them through school, got them nice clothes, and made sure they lived good.
Well, yeah.
So he says he needs a girl with that mother bear instinct, and he breaks everybody up into three teams of four.
But before he does that, today, like, he shows us, because he has this thing wrapped under a blanket.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
And supposedly, he's just sitting there fucking giggling away because he can't wait to show it.
He unveils the blanket.
Under the blanket.
And it's, under the blanket is a baby Brett.
A baby doll
Brett Michaels.
It's got the shitty cowboy hat.
The shitty shades.
And a fucking bandana just to throw on top of that. So, because fucking why not? And like, everyone's just cracking up because
yeah,
it's kind of fucking,
I mean,
dumb.
At least Brett didn't take it seriously. I would have really laughed if he tried to pull some shit like, I gotta be honest, it really wasn't a turn on. I spent a lot of time making baby Brett. I felt like they were laughing at me. I don't know.
At least
sounds like some tangent he'd go on.
I'll give them this. Brett, like, at least was like having fun with this gimmick.
Yes. So he breaks everybody up, and the idea is, here's the gimmick. They have to protect little baby Brett in a stroller and make it around the roller ring
three
rotations.
Yeah, three laps.
So one team goes at a time, and an opposing team, which is the actual LA Derby Dolls.
LA Derby Death Dolls, I wrote down.
Yeah. Was it Death Dolls? I thought it was just Dolls.
They said LA Derby Dolls, but then I saw a shirt that says Death Dolls.
Maybe they
couldn't. And that's a way fucking cooler name.
Yeah.
LA Derby Dolls or LA Death Dolls?
Death Dolls. Maybe it was a copyright thing or maybe.
Of their own thing?
Maybe VH1 was like, you know, we can show these naked women and have them saying bitch and ass uncensored, but Death Dolls, that's too gnarly, brah.
Who knows?
So, oh, and by the way.
Yo, dude, fucking. Tits, yeah, sure, but death,
nah man, you can't talk about death.
Yeah, no, okay, that's cereal.
Oh, by the way, it's also the LA Derby Dolls, and I wrote here for old time's sake, fucking Lacey.
Yes, Lacey, who pops out, it's like, what's up, skanks? Fuck, dude,
I'm like, fuck,
please tell me, did she say she's a fucking musician and can mob on roller skates? I hope to God she didn't fucking say some stupid shit off camera. Oh, I'm a musician. I could fuck a roller skate.
No, this is my, like, element. This is, like, my element because, like, I do this. This is what I do. I'm, like, a musician. This is what I do. God, I like the show even got flash PTSD because they show flashbacks of her doing whack shit through the last season. You know what? I got to give this show props for continuity because every single person on this season's cast that was there was literally like, oh fuck, it's fucking Lacey, what's this crazy whore doing
they
here?
Act like they actually know her personally. It's like, you just saw her fucking TV, what up? Yeah, she was fucking weird and wacky and like suck Brett's dick, but fuck it, isn't that what you chicks are like hopefully trying to do? I guess
none of the people on the show are as whack as Lacey. Which you could say makes boring television. At worst, they're just maybe scandalous or maybe a little bitter, not bitter, vindictive. But they're not like Lacey, which is legitimate manipulation and sociopathy.
The thing about Lacey is like, she would not fucking leave this show. And even at the reunion, she wouldn't get the fuck off the
stage. I said this too when we watched it. She had more screen time than Brett.
Dude, it's so fucking dumb. Is this Lacey's show or fucking Brett's show? So
Skull
I think
of
we
love. Skull of love.
You know what? Maybe these ladies do have a point. Maybe they have the right to act like they know Lacey, just how I acted.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And by the way, before that, I wanted to whichever team has the least damage done. Whichever team has the least damage done, the baby Brett wins. Also, Affliction t-shirt. He was wearing an Affliction t-shirt. That's an important plot point.
Are you sure that wasn't just his fucking daily?
That's true. So, we've got three teams, blue, red, and pink.
So, on the blue team, we got
Aubrey.
Angelique.
Christy Joe.
And Ina.
Ina.
So, on the red team,
we got Jessica.
Roxy.
Peyton.
And Amber. Now, on the pink team,
we got Megan.
We got Daisy.
We got Destiny.
And we got Catherine.
Yes. So everyone gears up. Pink team bonds immediately. They're like, because Catherine's like, oh man, I don't know these girls. You know, this is going to be whack. But then he's like, oh man, we came together and had strategy. You know, this was really cool, which is kind of ironic considering how things went.
You know what's this thing? I think, at this point too, because once they made the teams and they're showing the LA Derby Dolls because they're going to teach the ladies like a little basics on like how to deal with roller skates. For some reason, I wrote down note. These like LA Derby Dolls are kind of like what I would suspect Dylan, my guitar player's girlfriend, would look like if he was to have a girlfriend.
Just like thick, scary, tattooed rocker gal.
Did you just describe his fucking swipe right on whatever fucking shitty dating app he's using?
What's he on again? Tinder, Woo Plus? Is he on Hitch and
or like POF?
POF. POF was good back in the day. Sometimes.
Whatever. So
okay, Cupid.
All right, so let's get away from like Dylan not having a girlfriend.
There's a compilation of a bunch of hot women in short shorts falling on their cute asses, which is nice. And
just
then
basically, they're trying to escape, but it's just like,
the Death
dude,
Dolls
just drop,
have to give
drop
them some pointers.
Yeah, it's like drop, drop, drop.
Then Brett asks them, hey, are y'all ready for the stroller derby? Ha, ha, ha! You're so funny! Dude, that reverbed off the cymbal. On the ride, did you hear that?
Yes, I heard that.
Okay.
Which obviously, yeah, so it's time for the fucking stroller.
Also, the referee is a woman named Marlene like Dibitch or something.
It's literally,
but it's spelt die bitch.
So it's literally Marlene Dibitch.
Yes.
And she explains the whistle rules where she blows the whistle once and whoever the team that has the stroller goes.
Yes.
But then she'll blow the whistle again and it's time for the fucking death dolls to start hunting down whoever's rolling the stroller.
Yo, and these death dolls don't fuck around. Pink team goes, right? And then,
well, we first also meet fucking Dr. Franklin. Who I couldn't
read.
Was
he an actual accredited doctor this time?
No, he's not a real doctor.
God damn it.
But there was also some other bullshit text that was blurred the fuck out for whatever fucking late 2000 bullshit 240p.
They blurred out the fucking, what is that? They blurred out the fine print?
Or what? I just couldn't see it on my fucking, like, monitor.
They blurred out the disclaimer?
Yeah, so whatever. So Pink Team's the, like, basically, they're the first
Before
ones to
that,
start.
I need to comment. There's a part where Brett, because it comes back from commercial, there's a part where Brett looks, he's in the interview spot. He looks dead in the camera, no humor on his face. And he says, and I motherfucking quote, no hint of humor or joking. He says, I want to see if these women are willing to take a beating for their man. He's looking at the camera like I'm looking at you. He says, I want to see if these women are willing to take a beating for their man. I'm like, what the fuck? Who says that?
Yo, dude, fucking bad boy rock star Brett Michaels, lead singer of Poison.
Like, I felt like
25 million records sold.
I felt like calling my mom and just be like, hey, mom, did you ever have to get your ass kicked for dad for his love?
I hope the fuck not.
She would have told me, what the fuck? No. Why are you still watching Brett Michaels? Do you and James like Poison still? No! We don't like Poison!
Fuck.
So Pink Team, we're going to go through play-by-play because I took notes, but right. I need to preface this by saying Pink Team got their motherfucking asses kicked, and these death dolls are out for goddamn
Basically,
blood.
Basically, dude, the Pink Team, there's one way to describe this. They got slaughtered.
They got murked. They got their taints hand. Wait, women don't have taints. Wait, do they? They got their asses handed to them. They got their coochies crushed. Coochie's crushed.
Dude,
I like
Coochie
that.
Crusher.
Yeah, dude. There's literally bits where, like,
Gucci
this
crusher.
Baby gets its ass kicked. Fucking Lacey kicks the shit out of that goddamn
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, dude, because fucking Lacey, I would suspect, is a fucking baby puncher, and she fucking just...
She, like, tackles the stroller, and then just starts wailing on the fucking doll.
Yeah, and the fucking Pink Team's like, wait, you could just go and punch the fucking baby? Well, it's like, well, that is in the... It's like... I guess it's not a rule where you could just go in and just fucking start attacking the
baby.
In
roller derby, it's like hockey. The only rule is don't kill anybody.
I was gonna say, didn't like fucking Daisy try to like punch Lacey back and stuff
yes,
too?
Yes, she did. It was great.
It's like, get the fuck away from the child, you fucking sociopath.
In Megan's own words, she said, you know what? It sucked, but at least we look hot. I can't deny.
Dude, it's fucking Megan. Her fucking thing is, I'm not good at this. But at least I can think I look hot.
Yes.
And sure.
Sure. Red team is next. They kind of get kicked around too. Peyton is like, there's a part where they, because Peyton's pushing the cart, and there's a part where she gets tackled. And
but Peyton
is playing like NFL wide receiver and is clutching the baby to her chest. And she even like kissed the damn thing. Brett says, and I quote,
like, oh. She kissed the baby.
Brett says, whoa. And I quote, watching her do that made me just want to breed. Breed. Not have sex, not get laid, not come, but breed. He specifically, that turned him on so much. He didn't want to just have sex or make love or fuck. He wanted to impregnate Peyton. That is what he said with that constructed English sentence.
Fuck.
Those were the linguistics that he put upon us.
All right.
So after
yeah.
that.
Basically, near the end, once the red team finally makes
it
to the finish
way,
line, they fucking ripped off this kid's arm.
Yeah, one of the death dolls ripped off the goddamn arm.
And
I'm like, what the fuck?
And yo, she was fucking nobbing on it. These fucking savages.
Oh my god, yo! I'm saying Derby girls don't fuck around though.
Yo, dude, I fucking swear, dude. These, if like Dylan was dating one of these chicks, you know she'd be fucking bossing down at whatever band Dylan's playing that evening.
Penis flattening.
If it's like fucking
nightly,
yo. If it's a fucking Corpse Thrower set, it's like her and Seb's boyfriend, this fucking thick cholo in a triple X dystopia shirt with the brick shades, just fucking throwing down. That's like a fucking joke that we have in my DB band.
What?
Yeah, dude. It's literally the jokes like, Seb, since you say you're bi and you dealt with a girlfriend, dude, this time get yourself a fucking boyfriend. But get yourself a thick fucking cholo that listens to Morrissey and like wears a dystopia shirt, but still has that fucking lowrider brick shades and fucks up. Fucks and like fucking is a total freaking slam dance starter for whatever set Seb's playing.
Haven't you done half of that?
I have a triple X dystopia shirt.
No, but you don't. But don't you have a dystopia shirt?
I do not have a dystopia shirt.
Oh well, still you would, and you slam. I'm just saying that just sounds like you, bro.
I'm not bald with the pencil mustache and the cholo brick shades.
You do have a thin stash.
Yeah,
you got the 70s,
but not like
stash.
The friggin' like, not like a friggin' like kind of pencil goatee thing.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. But I guess my guitar player is now dating a lady. Okay, there goes me and Oscar's hopes and dreams of having our fucking thug motherfucking cholo in a fucking dystopia shirt just fucking getting down, and then fucking every time we're playing, it's like, that's right, that's my fucking man. I'm his fucking teddy bear. Yo, I'm fucking Seb's teddy bear. You don't fuck with him. Don't fuck with them, fool.
I'm Seb's fucking teddy bear.
Isn't that all we want in this world? Our guitar player
is to have a cholo as fuck boyfriend.
Yeah, cholo fucking
A4. I'm just saying, man, that's my fucking teddy bear, Holmes. You fuck with him, you fuck with me. I say, I'm gonna slit your throat and kiss my man on the lips. Good night, Holmes. You know what I'm saying, man? That's how we go on these streets, Vato.
Isn't that what we want? Let's get real here.
I kiss my homies. Oh my god, that hurt. Yo, man, yo, fool, I ain't gay. I'm homosexual.
What, fool? You got a fucking problem with homies kissing homies? Yo, fuck you, dude. I'll fuck you up.
Yo,
don't,
man,
fucking dare slam dance. I'll come after you, fool.
Yo, man, you homophobic? You better be Sebastian phobic, dude. If you be around my man, I'm gonna fucking slit you.
And then we'll fucking have sex on fucking your fucking knocked out ass.
Yo, man, mi abuelo's gonna make him some fucking beans, dude.
Now fuck you, homeboy. We're gonna go fucking be sad fools and listen to some Morrissey and shit.
We gonna make love to a metal version of Despacito.
Ooh.
Oh, my fucking stomach.
Oh. Oh, that was good.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
All right, yeah. All right. Oh, man. I felt like I was going to turn into a werewolf. I was laughing so hard.
So, yeah. Back to the fucking Brett Michaels show.
Blue team.
Yeah, so blue team. Christy Joe's the lead, and she's the one that's pushing the skater. Also to note that Christy Joe says she's a great skater. I think she's a confident, good skater.
She's pretty good.
Compared to the, like, here's the thing. The Derby Death Dolls, it's like fucking drinking water and just like walking when they're on roller skates.
Yeah, it's natural.
For them, it looks natural. Her, she looks like she has to like roller skate.
Yes. So basically, she kind of just goes Super Saiyan and gets a flawless victory.
Here's the thing. She's like able to like speed and make 2.5 laps.
Yes.
But like near the final stretch, the thick boss murderer.
Oh, and she comes from behind so tough.
Dude, she just like friggin' just like shoves skinny old pretty Christy Joe just down. But like Christy Joe's fucking like corpse is able to just slide on through the friggin' finish line. And then Lacey once like it's over, she still tries to pick up the baby and try to chuck it across the fucking rink.
Yeah, because she's just a bitch like that.
She's a fucking bitch. No, dude, she's a fucking musician. She's got fucking got this.
Oh, when it dude, comes she's to fucking
murdering
this
children. When it comes to murdering children, it's like a fucking thing.
It's like that thing in it's like that thing you said in episode 3 review where you accidentally almost said Brett was trying to murder these children, and you're just like, yeah, Brett Michaels is a motherfucking war criminal. Slacy's a motherfucking war criminal. So according to the doctor on the scene, he says pink team, and I wrote down what he said they had. He said pink team's baby had cerebral hemorrhage, shaken baby trauma, lacerated organs, spinal trauma. He's like, that some bitch is dead.
It's like, yeah, this child has no, like, no chance of surviving.
Red team.
And we're just like, dude, fuck. And then, like, you just see an adorable little inset of Daisy going like, no, we killed the baby.
Dude, I don't know what she's on, but it's cute. So then Red Team gets mild head trauma, torso trauma, bruised organs, and gets a fucking arm ripped off. But the doctor's like, it could live, but it would have a challenging life. I'm like, a baby got its arm ripped off. Okay.
Yeah, but in an instant, we got Jessica to tell us, well, what happened if it's just his left arm? He's still good. He's still got his right arm. What happened if he was a fucking lefty? Yeah, fuck it. You can learn to use your right arm shit.
So blue team gets head trauma, mild bruising, shaken baby trauma. And doctor says, well, he would need physical and mental therapy and some counseling, but he would probably live. And then as he's listing that the baby would need trauma therapy and stuff for like a good portion of its life, the girls all start shrieking, well, yeah, we won. Chrissy Joe's like, well, kidney therapy? Okay, we'll go together. I'm like, oh, wow, you're so quirky. You're so fucking quirky, Christy.
Well, compared to all these other chicks, shit.
At least she, you know what? She actually has, I think, a discernible personality.
Yes.
That's one thing I got from the show. Maybe it's because she got the solo date, but everyone else just mostly blended in together. I think Christy Joe has actually been able to stand it. Her and Daisy. Granted, we got spoiled a little on Daisy just because we know of other things.
But we'll let the show roll on.
So that happens. I'm like, wow, Rock of Love hates babies, I guess.
Hey, and don't forget the fucking insert, because like when he was listing off all the friggin' like damage on the blue team and saying like basically after like years of physical rehabilitation and therapy, he could live a normal life and become a rock star. And I just fucking died and cringed when I fucking saw that. I'm like, fuck the show, dude. What the fuck? Ah, God.
Says, prognosis, rock star.
Fuck.
So everyone gets... So Christy Joe, I don't know if this was actually part of the rules or if Brett was just so impressed.
Well, she's the one that pushed the stroller.
Yeah. So Brett
and the others were just meatbags just trying to block the fucking death dolls.
So Brett says, you know what, Christy Joe? You get an you're the MVP. You get a private date tomorrow. So at the house, all the losers are bummed. Roxy says she wants to save her back. She wanted to save her VIP pass, but now she doesn't know. Daisy has beef with Christy Joe because Christy Joe was talking shit on Catherine, which is kind of a nice change of pace to see, I guess, because actual friendship and camaraderie.
So wait, are you talking about like it's like Christy Joe is like hanging out with Destiny and Daisy, right?
Yeah.
Where basically, yeah, they're just kind of hanging and talking. Like, I guess Christy Joe is a mom.
Yeah.
Or at least that we got off from the conversation.
Apparently.
And then they're just basically saying, like, she's like, just flex because she's stoked she won. She's like, oh, yeah, I got motherly instincts. Mm-hmm. I know how to rollerblade and stuff. Yeah. And like Daisy and Destiny, who are on the pink team, were sinners. Well, Catherine was on our team. She's got motherly instincts. But then Christy Joe's like, yeah, but she can't skate. And they're like, oh, what? Oh, they're dissing Catherine? Oh my god, we gotta go tell Catherine what Christy Joe said. And it's like, well, fuck, don't worry. This is gonna get escalating into more nonsense.
So then we cut to the date, which is Ina, Angelique, and Aubrey, by the way. And the idea here is dinner and a show. They go to a club. I didn't get the name of the club.
Actually, I got the club when I could fucking pull up where it is because my notes got like. But basically, yeah. So they go to a club. At first, I thought this was a fucking strip club. guessing on where things are going, but it's a burlesque club.
It's a which are different things.
Yes. It's a burlesque club, and it is...
Which factors into the
plot.
And we meet
the owner, Ivan Kane, of Ivan Kane's 40 Deuce Burlesque Club.
40 Deuce, which a real
I wrote
club.
And when I looked at this motherfucker, it's like, all right, this dude's either really chill, or he's fucking sketch.
Yeah. He looks like a guy... He looks like a side quest guy that gives you missions in, like, a Grand Theft Auto game.
You're not wrong. It's
the part of the game where you get to buy businesses that give you money at random increments, and he's like the sleazy strip club owner. But then you come back and he's like, "Hey man, one of my girls got kidnapped by her pimp. You gotta save her, Brett." I would play a Grand Theft Auto game where you're Brett Michaels. I'm not gonna lie.
All right.
So they go to the club.
Yeah, they're chilling, having dinner. We got one lady who's just fucking ripping it, doing her burlesque dance.
Because here's my thing: the idea is that some dancers are gonna dance, and then the other girls get to dance too. And in my mind, I'm like, well, okay, Aubrey's a dancer, Angelique's an actual stripper, and Ina is hot. So my penis was very excited going into this. I was only semi let down, but yeah, there's intercut bullshit with the hat. Back with the house. So after they like go in, then at the house, Christy Joe starts some shit with Catherine by telling...
No, here's the thing. No, it's fucking Destiny and
Daisy.
Yeah,
that's right.
They go up to Catherine, and they're just saying that Catherine fucking dropped it on the team. I think they like played a fucking shitty game of telephone where they mistold her. Felt like they were like telling her that Christy Joe might have dissed Catherine on their motherly skills. It's like, no. She like dissed you on your skating skills. It's like, what? Saying I was the fault of her team. It's like, no, all you got slaughtered.
Yeah.
All you guys were not competent skaters. The only one was Christy Joe.
Yes.
She earned her fucking thing. And she just like said something. But these chicks are fucking, this information flew past her head like fucking idiots. So they start fucking blowing up. And like, dude, they're like confronting Christy Joe and shit, I think.
Then that comes afterwards, because now we're back at the club. Drinks and burlesque dancers.
Yeah, the dancer girl, just does her thing. She's
the girls,
just
Brett,
it.
The Brett called the girls hot. Angelique calls the girls hot, which to be honest, I assume most French people are just bi anyway. And she's like, and she's talking to one of the dancers that gets there. And she's like, well, because I don't think Angelique understood this is a burlesque club, or she doesn't understand what burlesque clubs are, because she's talking to the stripper and she's like, I take all of the clothes off. And then the dancer's
like,
you're
hot and sexy. Well, it's like, you need to, it's like, why don't you just take some of all of your clothes?
And then the dancer is like, excuse me, the dancer is like, no, it's about, because she doesn't know what Angelique's about to pull. So she's like, no, it's the art of the tease. And
here's the thing about burlesque. I've only been to like one burlesque show, and this was not even trying. This was like our fucking trip to WrestleMania in New Orleans.
First night,
after fucking waiting way too fucking long for a bullshit po' boy sandwich, I waited so fucking long for a nothing happening sandwich. But we get some pretty solid beignets.
The beignets.
Some solid beignets at Café Du Monde.
Hell yeah.
Because like, that's a fucking spot where it's open 24 hours.
24
and you get
hours.
Yourself a fucking hot, fresh fucking sugary pastry some hot cocoa.
We order their box of shit to make beignets at home, and they come out good, but oh my God, dude. They're nothing like just tasting them at that restaurant.
At that restaurant.
Yes.
And then we're just roaming the street, and then we just see there's this one fucking packed little bar club, and a chick's just doing her thing, and the motherfucker at the door, because we're being fucking creeps outside trying to stare through the fucking window going, woohoo! And then, but like, the door fool is like, oh,
what's
dude.
That sound?
It's like, dude, it's free. You could come on in. And like, me and Bones was like, oh, what? Yo, fucking walk on in. But Dylan's a fucking, for some reason, Dylan didn't want to go in.
Oh my God, I remember the story. That's right. Why did he want to go in? It was free.
I don't fucking know.
It was free.
And here's the thing. She didn't go like full nude. Like the closest thing she had was like pasties on over friggin' nipples.
Yes.
But here's the thing about a burlesque. Strippers kind of have like a usual stripper kind of routine.
Burlesque people are like choreographed dances.
Dude, it's a fucking entertainment show.
Yeah.
It's not even like a horn dog show. It's just
really
fucking fun to watch chicks.
It's really a kind, well, I guess you could argue stripping is too. Burlesque is a type of theater.
Yes.
That's what it is. It's more theater. Like, there's dancing, but like I remember watching like a documentary about this on like Showtime or HBO or maybe it was Cinemax once about burlesque stuff. I was like 14, but I watched this documentary and it was talking about how, you know, it's not just dances to songs, which they do, but like they'll do like plays, like short, like 30, 45 minute plays and stuff. It really is a type of theater. Like, yeah, there's dancing. Yeah, there's nudity. Sometimes they go topless. They almost never go bottomless. But it's just scantily clad hotness.
It's like, and they wear like really, really fun costumes.
Yeah, yeah. It's a
stripper gear. It's like they might have like different like clothing and stuff, but never as elaborate as a burlesque set.
Because, and that's why I was saying the thing about Angelique not knowing about strip club stuff, that comes to factor into the plot, because just skipping some of the house stuff. So first Ina dances and she's like, look, I'm no dancer, but I'm hot. So I'm just going to do my best.
And here's the thing. She's doing a slow routine. Yeah. And we get a quote from Brett for his like critique on Ina. Ina. My Ukrainian love tank.
Love tank!
She sucks at burlesque dance. She sucks as a burlesque dancer, but man, she is sexy.
You know what's funny about that is right as he said that, I didn't know he was going to say this. Right as I said this, I was literally typing in my notes. I was like, well, Ina sucks as a dancer, but at least she's hot. And then Brett says that fucking thing.
Well, here's the thing. She did a slower song and was doing a slower routine, so it wasn't the worst.
No, it wasn't bad.
Like, it fit the mood. It's not a more upbeat song, and she's going the pace of a fucking snail.
Yeah, it felt
old. Or Dylan walking upstairs.
Oh my god. Do I walk upstairs faster than Dylan?
I don't fucking know. You want to have a stairs race?
Bro, he's like half dead right now.
Yeah.
Metaphorically. So then there's that. The next Aubrey gets up, and she's okay.
She does a solid job.
She's a better... You can tell she's definitely... She's most likely a better dancer than a burlesque dancer, which are different things, because burlesque is a type of dancing.
Even when, like, dancing around, doing her try to do burlesque, at least she shows some dancing charisma.
Yeah. But then Frenchie...
Angelique
gets naked.
And, like, you basically expect what's going to happen. She basically go full news, but here's the thing.
I have a feeling
she's not a fucking stripper. The way she like dances, it's just so awkward and weird. She's trying to play stripper, but I don't think she is a fucking stripper or strip dancer. Like, think the way of her awkward movements.
She could still be a stripper, but maybe she was just trying to upplay shit to Brett.
Bro, if anything, she's either a weird exhibitionist.
I think that's what it is.
Or she's some fucking fool in Amsterdam that rents out a fucking little like...
In Amsterdam?
Yeah, for a fucking red light district freaking naughty booth.
Oh, that makes sense. You know what? That would make some sense, actually.
I'm just saying. Like, I'm not assuming, but I'm just guessing on like... Because when she does her strip moves, it's like, I'm not... My, like, few times I've been to a strip club, the strippers do not dance as weird as you do.
You know, and here's the reason why I brought up her doing whatever factors into the plot. Because, you know what, this is part of my tinfoil hat theory that somehow, some way, this show is, like, either is, like, a subtle deconstruction of reality shows. Because Angelique, the owner and the dancer they were talking to earlier... go up to her and they're like, we have a no nude policy. And Angelique tries to do the whole, you know, oh, I'm sorry, I was just feeling it and I needed to express my body. And they're like, no, we could get shut down. And Brett tells in the interview, in the interim, they could have gotten shut down. And it's shit because, like, and which factored into the elimination. It's just stuff like that. And then, you know, last show with the peep show, all the girls, all of them were like, this is like repulsive and disgusting, you know? But it's like that thing where, you know, it's supposed to be like, yeah, you know, horny rock dude stuff. And then there's this where she's like, oh, I go the full nude.
Dude,
but it had consequences.
Yeah, she went fucking full nude.
That's why
Gooch and everything.
That's why I think this show is subtly reality shows played realistically, because it's shitty people that either suffer consequences or get away with shitty stuff, because that's how life works. And it plays into Christy Joe's date, because to get there, that's where I'm getting at. To get there, after Angelique almost shuts the place down,
which they say, but it's like, dude, shut the fuck up. I know. And here's the thing, I'm gonna give a shout out to the podcast Reality Graveyard, because they did this gimmick before we did, reviewing this show and other fucking shows on VH1 and shit.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give a shout out to them. And they fucking like, but I remember Rise, I pulled in here, because I got to the part Rise, they start talking about the club, and they're just going like, oh man, how does Brett able to get like a whole like burlesque club to himself? Oh yeah, Brett has so much money. And then I started screaming at my fucking steering wheel, no! VH1 paid for the fucking freaking fucking building to rent out for the fucking evening so that they could videotape Brett's weird ass fucking idea for a burlesque date. Don't fucking lie to me. And then them saying, oh, you could have got us shut down and stuff. The only way I feel like they could get shut down if they feel like Angelique stripping is false advertisement. Mm-hmm. But
true.
How the fuck are you gonna get shut down if there's no other fucking customers there? Fuck you. I'm not that dumb.
There were cameras.
There were cameras. But this is Angelique. I feel like the show's aware. And then them going like, oh, we might have been shut down. It's like, no. This is on like a normal night and someone pulled that shit. Sure. Maybe you don't have the permits for it to be a strip club.
Which they are different things.
But this is a fucking VH1 show. I'm sure VH1 paid for the fucking insurance and shit for that shit. So don't fucking lie to me.
To be fair, though, how much money do we think VH1 has?
A fuck enough to do Brett's bullshit ideas.
Do you think next season costs more money? Because next season's on a bus.
I don't fucking want to know. They already had a higher budget for this show.
Oh, they had a higher budget. So they get back to the house. But before that, you see, Megan and a couple others are arguing with Christy Joe. And Megan makes Christy Joe cry because...
Well, here's the thing. It's like, all the ladies, earlier, it was like fucking either Destiny, Daisy, and Catherine.
Yeah.
Where, like, they go up, and, like, Catherine's trying to confront Christy, saying, like, that she's, like, talking trash and, like, basically, like, dissing her mother's skills. And Christy Joe, who tells the truth, is like, no, all I said is that you couldn't skate. Which is, like, and maybe you lost the challenge for that, but it's, like... It's all right to be mad about that. But then we got them. It's like, oh, man, no. Christy Joe just knows how to twist words around and stuff. But like, no, Christy Joe's telling the fucking truth. And in this fucking insert, this fucking idiot Jessica tells me, it's like, oh, I can't trust Christy Joe anymore. Because, like, she's twisting words. You can't trust You can't trust Christy Joe because she's telling the fucking truth, you fucking idiot.
You can't
trust the truth.
Didn't
you not see the fucking challenge earlier? Are you insulting me? And then yes. And then Megan, a bunch of other ladies come up. And then like Megan, like a fucking idiot, goes with eighth grade level fucking dissing.
Dude, this is eighth grade because Christy's not wearing any makeup right now. And she's like, oh my God, Christy without makeup. What's with this monster show? She's like putting her hand up in her face and stuff.
Like, yeah, putting her hand
in. I'm like, she looks prettier than you, you basic blonde bitch.
It's like, Larry's like, dude, fuck you. Christy Joe did nothing wrong except said that.
Except get stoked that she won.
Yes, and said Catherine couldn't skate, but then all these whack-ass chicks started fucking ganging up on her. But whatever. Fucking the ladies come back from the date, I guess.
They come back from the date. There's some partying and fun and
stuff. Yeah, so Brett's like, oh, yeah, dude, I think chicks are late to party. But then fucking Aubrey hears crying in the bathroom and realized Christy Joe is not having a good time. And then, oh my God, I got fucking, dude, it was like just getting pissed back and pissed. Oh yeah, Rise Brett got back too. He does a Rick James quote where he comes in and he's like, unity. Fuck you, Brett.
Don't say that like you know what it means, Brett Michaels.
Unity. Which, yeah, Aubrey noticed Christy Joe's in the bathroom crying, goes to comfort her. But in an inset, she's like, oh. Christy Joe needs more self-esteem. You weren't getting fucking berated by these blonde fucking savages.
There was like three or five of them at once just all around her. It was like some middle school shit.
It's like, dude, and this is on camera.
Yeah.
I could give Christy Joe a second just to cry her feelings out. That was hard.
And you know what? She held it back until the cameras were off her. Because you could see in her eyes, she's walking away. She's just like stone cold, just like hollow inside. It's like, fuck, dude.
And these fuck. Here's the thing. If it was on, like, Megan herself and she got attacked, how Chrissy Joe attacked, I bet she fucking, like, she's either going to be, like, have no emotion.
Yeah.
And not fucking emote and just go, like, I'm hot, whatever. And then just, like, go off and stare off in the moon or go look at, like, whatever the fuck she does. Or be fucking in the bathroom crying because she got savaged by these got ganged up by these wackos.
Fuck, if I was in Chrissy Joe's shoes, I would have cried.
Seriously.
That's like five people at once.
Five people at once berating you while you're also the camera's on
and
you.
And they're not just talking shit. They're calling her ugly.
Like, they're going beyond talking shit and telling truth. This is now just nonsense. They're just being mean to be mean.
Yes.
It's like, dude, fuck you.
Chrissy Joe, in this one episode, went around from being decently forgettable to being, like, easily, like, probably my favorite character. She's the most defined and sympathetic, I think. Unless we're missing something, because I can't tell if the show tried to portray her sympathetically or not. I think it did.
And, like, these chicks try to tell us one thing, but we saw, and it's like, no, Chrissy Joe did nothing wrong.
Yeah. What'd you say? It's just like, are you insulting me? Are you insulting my eyes?
Are you insulting me with your stupidity?
So, so after that happens...
I know. It was like, fuck, yeah. Aubrey noticed. Tried to tell us she needs more self-esteem. It's like, Aubrey, if you were there, you'd be on the bathroom too.
Almost anyone
would.
But
then the comfort
works. Remember Brandy C last episode? She was crying in the closet, and that was just from Aaron. That was one person. This was five.
Yes.
Fuck.
I'm like, but like, Aubrey does put a good point. Chrissy Joe is like a solid threat.
No, she is.
Like, she's pretty.
She is.
She's pretty chill.
Yeah, she's chill.
I'm just saying.
She's and I'll get into this more when we get to her date. But
so, but now it's next morning.
Big John has a note, and it's mostly for Chrissy Joe.
But prior to the note, Destiny and Daisy are scheming to use their VIP passes on Chrissy Joe's date.
Oh God,
today.
This was so douchey. Destiny was whatever. I went from kind of liking Daisy to being kind of like, Daisy, what the fuck, after this.
Yes, but then Big John and
Big John, Chrissy Joe got a note. He didn't say that.
He's like, can everyone come into the living room?
Let's go, ladies.
Let's go, ladies.
Chrissy, so the note says, Chrissy Joe, at yesterday's challenge, you kicked ass skating.
Today, we'll spend time on a date you're creating.
She chooses the date. To the rest of my girls, I must let you know,
at tonight's elimination, two more will go.
To ride my backstage pass and eat my limp. Fuck. Eat my limousine.
Yes.
So Chrissy Joe, and I thought this was a great idea. Chrissy Joe's date was a chillin' barbecue. She like cooked steak for him and Brett, for her and Brett, and just like wanted a chillin' lunch, dinner,
eat some steaks and crack some beers and just talk.
Yeah. Fuck, that's me at my house, minus the beers. I crack open a cold and Diet 7-Up. Mm-hmm. Or a bottle of Crystal Geyser water.
So yeah, and like Chrissy Joe's like grilling up some solid T-bone steaks. At this point,
I'm
Daisy
a ribeye man, but the good T-bone's a good T-bone.
Whatever, dude, a good steak's a good steak. And hell Daisy, yeah. And Destiny are dolling themselves up wearing like booty shorts and bikini tops.
Yes.
To get ready for their fucking shenanigans.
Yes.
To interfere with Chrissy Joe's date. And then and they're like trying to get Roxy onto it. But Roxy is like, I don't feel like I need to do such things. So.
Which every time someone says that, they go home. Almost in that episode. It happens every time. Every time they're like, I don't need to bring myself down to this level. I don't need to do that. They don't make it. Because the show is a realistic reality show where you got a douchey guy who gives in the human inhibitions, and he's like, oh, it's like pretty sexy lady grinds up on me versus girl that wants to make me work for it, and I'm a rock star that's had pussy handed to me for the last 30 years. I'm going to go with the first one.
All right, so Brett and Chrissy meet up, and Brett's like just down because like Chrissy tells him what the date is, and it's just a chilling barbecue. And it's like, all right, Brett thought it was cool.
He even liked the steak.
Yeah, he eats the steak, and he's like, hopefully the steak's good. I'm not sure it's good. And Brett's like, oh, fuck.
Listen, she should have won the whole show right here. She made a good steak for her man. That's marriage right there. That's marriage material. Oh, speaking of marriage, by the way, I forgot about that. So
Forget about Mary.
No. Because, you know, they're talking and stuff. And then it gets to a point to where Christy Joe,
she's basically like, she's telling her life story. She's being honest. And she tells us that, yeah, she has two exes.
Yeah.
And one of, and like, they're, she's both married to him. And then right now, she also tells Brett, she's in the process of divorce.
She's still legally married.
And Brett, like, it was hilarious because Brett's like, oh, like, she's like in the process of a divorce. Hi-oh! And then he hears that she's legally married and he's just, what? You're still legally married? It's like,
dude, do you not know how divorce works?
I'm like,
wait, has Brett ever been married?
I don't fucking know.
No, he never has been. In his own words, he's been engaged a few times.
I'm about to say, it's like, if you're like legally married, I don't think you can just get that done in 5 minutes.
No, divorce. It takes like a solid fucking year. Because there's the separation period, then there's, you have to file the shit, then you've got to wait for the annulments, then you got to serve the papers, then both parties have to sign and then submit them, and depending on the other party either dragging their ass or not, that shit takes a long time. Sometimes people don't do it. I worked with this one woman named Lisa McDonald. She had been legally separated from her husband for like 5 years, but he never signed the divorce paper, so she was still married to him. Technically.
Yeah, on a fucking tax level.
Not together, hate him, but still legally married.
So, fuck you.
The shit takes a while.
So, I can understand, Brett. Like,
when my dad separated from, like, his second wife, all that shit took, like, 2 years until they were actually divorced.
So, yeah, fucking Brett, like a fucking idiot. It's just like, wait, you're legally married? And it's just like, what? And it's like, I think being legally married is a totally
the only way divorce goes quick is if you have money.
It goes quick, and everyone's on the same page.
But even then, it takes a while.
But no one's on the same page.
Yes.
And it seems like Christy Joe, who is like, Christy Joe's pretty, but she isn't the most confident, and she can be kind of a shy chick. Most likely, as she said in episode one, she usually hasn't had to work to like meet a dude or try to get a dude's attention and stuff. They usually come to her.
Because
she's most
pretty.
Likely dealt with some fucking weird-ass fucking weirdos, and being in a divorce are most likely trying to fucking deal with that responsibility.
Yes.
So Brett.
Chill.
Fuck. And here's the thing. But then like...
But then Destiny shows up.
Yes.
And I actually have to give Brett a little credit because he still let Destiny interrupt, but she walks up. She's like, I want to use my VIP pass. And he looks at her incredulously and he's like, you mean like right now? And she's like, yes. And he's even like, what were my rules on that again? And he at first he's like he's like, okay, do you want to like, I don't know, go somewhere or whatever? Like he's not that into it. He actually feels like he feels bad for doing it and doesn't want to do it because Destiny makes him
Destiny,
send
this fucking savage. It's just like, well, nah. And it's like, do you want to go somewhere? And it's like, no, we can do it here. And he's like, Christy, you go buzz off for a second.
Yeah. And then wearing her basically swim gear, she straddles Brett Michaels and starts making out with him. And then, I mean, they talked a little bit, but that's basically all that happened. And then she walks away. Christy comes back.
Here's the thing. Like, yeah, Destiny, like, tells a little bit of her life story. She's fucking divorced, too.
Yeah.
But actually divorced.
Like, really
divorced. But only one, dude that she was married to and stuff. So, yeah, she has an ex, whatever, dealt with that, and basically tells her life story, makes out. And, like, I guess this gives Brett... his fucking, like, processing prior to a moment to chill and realize, oh, yeah, Christy Joe is, like, technically legally married.
But then I guarantee you it's not her fault.
Yes.
So then eventually Christy Joe comes back.
And, like, yeah, her and Brett are jaw-jacking again. Which, oh, fuck, sorry. Like, for some reason, I keep going back up on my notes. So you take this away.
Okay. Hold on. So Christy Joe comes back.
Actually, I'm right here, yeah.
Okay. And they start talking again a little bit. There's not, like, any, like, neat info stuff. Not as neat as, like, the first round. It's just more talking about her personality and stuff and then past things. But then this is when Daisy comes out.
Here's the thing. Destiny heads back. Rendezvous with Daisy. And then basically it's like, all right, Daisy, your turn to come out. So, like, Brett's, like, sitting there. It's back Christy Joe. They're basically telling us, like, a committed relationship. Oh, fuck. It was like some stupid shit where Brett's telling us, yeah, in a committed relationship, I stick to it. Then why the fuck is your baby mama an on again, off again fucking girlfriend? Why aren't you like in the sense of marriage? That's dumb! You fucking lied to my face. Dude, I was getting so mad on this episode. But yes, Daisy appears. And Brett this time knows, like, I'm not, he's like not stoked. And it basically tells, like, does the thing. It's like, are you sure you want to do this? Because this to me is, it seems like now like a game plan just to like get Christy Joe mad. But Daisy realizes that Brett's not stoked. It's kind of mad and realizes, you know, maybe it isn't cool. I'm going to walk out. Oh, and there was also some reason, too, before Daisy popped out, where she's hanging in a room. Her fucking boobs are blurred for whatever reason.
Yeah, that was weird. I don't think she was naked.
No, but she's wearing a pretty fucking skimpy-ass fucking, like, top.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, then, like, Ina should be blurred out, like, half the time.
Whatever, but yeah, so Daisy kind of sense, like, you know what? Maybe this isn't a good idea. And please fix your mic.
Yeah, I am. There we go.
And realize it's not a good idea. Maybe I shouldn't do this. So Daisy gets the message and, like, backs out. So, yeah.
Yes.
I guess, like, what? Did, like, just Brett and Chrissy Joe just finish out their date from there?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah. And then basically we get the girls all hanging out, being, like, like, actually, no, we don't. Well, actually, wait, fuck, we do. God, there's so much stupid shit. God damn it, there's so much weird shit. Basically, Daisy's not an ass. So basically, she realizes that what she's doing is kind of not cool, so she walks her way. Christy tells Brett that the house is pretty tough to deal with. And then Brett, to her face, is like, it's only going to get worse.
Which is truth. The truth.
And then, like, it's literally, it's like, if you can't handle this, what do you think it will be like with these fucking savage fangirls backstage at my show?
Which made me laugh weird. Because I'm like, Brett. Stop. Come on, you're not getting savage fangirls. You're getting girls stoked on you. There's no lie. There's no lie there. Probably even still, and he's pushing 50 now, but not savage.
So Brett feels like Christy Joe needs to toughen up, and like, he's not wrong.
He isn't wrong.
Which then now Brett feels bad for shooing Daisy away.
Yeah.
And like, so he shooing goes to Daisy talk to away, her. While Daisy was also in a pretty like, in her like bikini and stuff. So yeah, they're talking. Yeah. And Daisy, the little adorable girl, is like, oh my God, I've been like dreaming of you like all week and stuff. So it's like, I'm sorry. I feel so sorry what I did earlier. I'm just like all nervous and whatnot.
I'm like, you knew what you were fucking doing. You just grew a conscience in the last second.
I have a feeling like Daisy's one of those chicks where she kind of like succumbs to peer pressure and might not make the best decisions.
I mean, Ronnie Radke convinced her to have her own show.
Ronnie Radke?
Yeah, what'd I say?
Ronnie Radke.
That's what I said.
The singer of Falling in Reverse.
No, not him.
Ricky Rackman.
That's what I said, Ricky Rackman. What'd you say?
You said Ronnie Radke.
No, you just said Ronnie Radke from Falling in Reverse.
Oh, do you want me to pause this, motherfucker? It's on audio. You said Ronnie fucking Radke.
Listen, I like Escape the Fate, okay? But I'm going to be honest. I think they're actually better without Radke because I like the music direction they went. They dropped some of the pop punk and went more like post-punk hard rock, and then they just went straight metal. Escape the Fate is... Okay, you look like you want to kill me. I'm sorry. You should try. Give Escape the Fate a chance. They are actually good. I promise.
Everyone likes Escape the Fate. I'm not listening to Escape the Fate.
Listen to the albums without Racky.
Whatever.
They're actually good.
So to put it simple, Brett and Daisy had a heart to heart.
Yes.
Basically, Brett's just going to like, he's like felt bad. He saw Daisy like tearing up a little bit, but then he comments that he'd go look down at her boobs, then sad face, and then her boobs, and sad face, and they, like, make out and shit, so.
Adorable.
Yeah. Whatever, yeah, so now the girl, like, girl's all prepping, getting ready for fucking elimination.
And speaking of elimination, Brett comes out in his fucking Yakuza shirt.
Dude, he has such a fucking tame outfit. What happened to his weird bullshit from first season?
Cow skin robe!
Seriously, we haven't got this nonsense. It's almost disappointing.
It's like, he doesn't even wear the affliction shirts anymore. Do you think people back then were making fun of him? And he like saw the message boards in the forums and he was like, well, they're not stupid.
Whatever. So yeah, basically prior elimination, we got a bunch of ladies in their inset promos.
Yeah.
Just basically
inset
like
promos.
So our inset interviews basically talking about like how much they'd be hating on Christy Joe.
This is like Rocky Mountain Pro with their inset promos. Hi, I'm Mean Gene Oakland here today with Daisy.
Which, yeah.
Wait, did Mean Gene work for Smoky Mountain? I forget. I know he was AWA.
All right. So it's now time for elimination.
Which I have the order.
So the first one to get the pass is
Daisy.
It's actually,
fuck, Destiny. Sorry.
Which Brent tells us she used her VIP pass properly. What the fuck? She did not. Maybe.
I almost knocked over the drums.
It's like, no, she used it in malicious intent to fuck with Christy Joe. But I guess, Brent, it fucking worked. Fuck you. Dude, it pissed me off so hard when he fucking said that. That she used her pass properly. It's like, fuck, no. We saw you on the tape. You were not stoked.
You didn't want it.
I think you're just more stoked out of the random chaos that you needed a moment to relax on Christy Joe saying she's legally married. I can understand that's kind of a fucking bomb.
Yeah.
When you're talking to a lady and she tells you she's kind of legally married. So
yes.
I will give you that.
A little bit.
But fuck you. When saying she used the pass properly.
You don't understand, audience. He was yelling about it right now. I saw a vein protrude from his neck, like he was fucking Vegeta going on an anti Goku rant.
Dude, this fucking episode was pissing me off so hard. Like the level of stupidity,
you weren't even angry Vegeta like Vegeta on Namek. You were like Majin Vegeta levels of pissed off at the world.
Fuck. All right. So yeah. So the next person is
Destiny, then it's
Daisy.
Then Ina.
Aubrey.
Peyton.
Catherine.
Amber.
Megan.
Jessica.
And now it's down to the final pass. So the last three ladies that are standing is Roxy, Christy Joe, and Angelique.
Which I gotta be honest, I think I saw the results to how this season ended like once. But I was actually torn. I'm like, well, wait a minute. I feel like I knew Roxy was going, but I'm like, Angelique, he's stoked on Angelique. I'm like, oh, and Christy Joe, this and that. So I was actually kind of tense. And then drum roll, turns out
Christy Joe gets the final pass.
Christy Joe gets the pass. I felt a little bad for Roxy, but I kind of saw it coming. And she even commented she should have used her VIP pass. Angelique, I was surprised, but
she's just too wild.
That's what I say. Ever since she showed up, he seemed intimidated by her a bit because he's a free spirit and he likes his women like that. But she's
he says he does,
but she legitimately gives no fucks.
Yeah. Which basically there's a thing. It's like, you know what? I kind of went down this path before and it didn't work out. And it's like, dude, I think he referenced Heather right there on Heather being all weird and wild and showing her boobs like a decent amount of the time.
Yes.
So maybe Brett learned from this previous season.
No, I think it's because with Heather,
Angelique's just fucking wild.
Yeah, she's too wild. Heather was like wild, but you could tell she was like in control and had a bearing on her surroundings. And most of the time she did that, at least half the time she was drunk. Angelique did that shit sober, no problem. So I don't know. Maybe, maybe Heather was like what was similar to the stripper that broke his heart, but maybe Angelique literally was like the stripper that broke his heart.
No,
I don't know.
I think he just got intimidated with Angelique and she just said, it's like, you know what?
I think Bret Michaels is afraid of women.
Afraid of like very wild women. Don't worry, Bret. I don't think I can handle Angelique either.
Angelique is one of those women that guys like Bret Michaels and like, I don't know, my dad would think they could handle because they're like, you know, oh, they're hot.
But European. Yeah, wow.
Hot, literally a hot European, just Amazonian blonde. But it's also the thing where just like, no, you couldn't.
Dude.
My dad would literally say, yeah, my dad has a saying about women like Angelique. Fuck. He says, I mean, he feels this way about one of my brothers, his girlfriend. And he's like, nah, I just use him for sex and nothing else.
It's bad. Everyone, please. That's some kind of bad misogynist thinking.
Listen. My dad was born in 53, Mexican Catholic. He's a boomer. But listen, he's one of those boomers that when he says stuff like that, yeah, it's not right. But when he says it, it's like kind of endearing and charming and funny because of the way he says it. Is it not right?
It's a bad joke.
But trust me, he's the kind of guy that you could vibe with, though. So I give him a pass on things like that. Because one, he didn't really mean it, I'm assuming. not too much.
Bad joke.
But it, but I mean, that's what he would say about
or
Angelique.
Or just useful thinking. But Angelique reminds me of this one time I saw Vice cover this fucking body mod freaking couple. Where, like, this chick looked like Angelique.
I think I know this.
Like, her boyfriend is, like, this weird, pale-as-fuck, bald dude with fucking tats and, like, his fucking lizard tongue, freaking dyed eyes.
I know that dude. He's in Ripley. He's the guy that kind of looks like a reptile, right?
With, like, not the reptile. It's okay, never mind. Other. Angelique would most likely go back to Europe and go like hang out. We'll most likely date some like kind of chilling.
Angelique, I don't think is like the settled down type. And there's nothing wrong with this. Angelique to me is the kind, she just wants to have fun, have sex, which is perfectly fine.
Well, at least on the show.
She seems that way.
Yes. Who knows what she is in real life?
Yeah. So did you get much of the Brett saying goodbye to the girls?
It's just really Roxy got eliminated because it's like she's just bum, and then like Brett felt like he didn't like really connect with her, you know, that stuff. And then Angelique is just like, you're just too much for free spirit. Basically, yeah, she's just weird and promiscuous and like, I don't know, almost getting a burlesque.
But Brett's weird
almost
and promiscuous.
Almost getting a burlesque club. Well, he's not going around whipping out his dick on camera. At least not
he is with Pam Anderson.
With his shitty grainy fucking sex tape.
Have you ever watched it?
I have a feeling I accidentally ran into it on Pornhub one time. But not full on watched it. It's like, dude, what the fuck is this? It's like this shitty fucking camera.
You know what the 90s
funny? Technology off in the corner of
Brett
the room.
Brett Michaels does not have sex like a rock star. Or maybe he does. I don't know. Rock stars are always portrayed as in like movies and stuff. Rock stars only ever seem to like get ridden, or they just go like really fucking ham doggy style. Brett just laid there. I think he thrusted a little bit at sometimes, but he just laid there and like he was laying on the bed, and then he was like sitting in a chair. And yeah, if I remember correctly watching that for science purposes, I think Pam Anderson did most of the work, which sounds about right.
Whatever, Brett, you're not Tommy Lee and you don't have his third leg.
I'm telling you. Brett wishes he was like the Motley Crue dudes.
Whatever. So next week, the ladies are building choppers? Girls complaining about connecting with Brett. And then in the credits, we got Amber. Though, like, only time Amber has been shown.
Yeah, like, she had that big old moment last episode. She didn't do shit this episode.
Yeah, no. She's just her just dorking around trying to figure out a mouthpiece before she got fucking slaughtered by these, like, death dolls. Dude, I need a moment, dude. I'm fucking hot. This episode took it out of me right now.
Yeah, that,
Was it me or this fucking episode was just so hard?
This episode
I had a busy
was a
day.
Lot. This episode had a busy day.
I had three goals in my... I had, like, four big things. One, make some breakfast and drink enough liquids because I gotta donate blood. Two, I had a choice between either uploading the new my fucking two bands that we did a split together because fuck it. But I was like, all right, I feel like I should do the fucking get notes for this damn show first. Just because I feel like that's the most responsible thing. That's the main goal.
Yeah.
And then like I was kind of crunching because it was eating up time. And it's like, all right, I don't want to show up late to the to my blood donation appointment. So I'm kind of crunching down getting this. But this fucking episode had something fucking stupid every fucking second that required me to pause and to put down notes in anger. What the fuck?
Hey, listen. How do you think I felt? I started watching that episode at like 9:30 last night, and I didn't finish it till almost 1 a.m.
Oh, that's 4 fucking hours.
To be fair, I was doing some other stuff. I showered and had to have a little...
You took some breaks.
I had to take some breaks. Dude, I don't know what it is about season 2. They just crammed so much shit in each episode. I felt like season 1, yeah, there was boring periods, but season 1 to me was way better paced to me. Because, yeah, there was slow and even boring moments and even full episodes almost. But... every episode, I'm just assaulted with noise, girls yelling, this and that, challenges, just cuts. There's no breathing room, which I get it, it's a reality show, but this season's like way faster pace. It's like, It watch season 1 to 2. It's like you put on that Osprey Ricochet match from like 2016, and then you just watch, I don't know, Shingo wrestle Ishii, and it's just like two completely different speeds.
Oh no, you should do a better reference. Fucking Osprey versus
Suzuki and Ishii.
Osprey versus Ricochet of like was like
2016.
Yeah, or like maybe 2015.
Yeah,
the first time then the Super Juniors they met, that was a controversial match. Then to the fucking a fucking Ibushi and Jay White match, which they had in like the year of the time of this recording,
yeah,
the year 2020, they had a fucking awesome match. This yeah, G1,
it was great.
Like, dude, it was like paced well.
I saw the clips of that
about
one on
G1,
YouTube.
Yeah, here's the thing about like G1, it's like they have 30-minute time limits, so it's like if they go a little long, it's like they start kind of picking up the pace a little bit.
You could argue like I have that in some ways.
It was so awesome because fucking Ibushi went fucking beast mode and was killing like Jay White and Ghetto like geeks. Jay White was able to pop his fucking finisher out of nowhere. And like Ibushi, not a weird fucking dude like Kenny, kicked out when he hit his finisher the first time.
Yep.
After so much drama.
You know, and I've said this before, you could make the argument that the G1 matches have the samey to almost the exact same structure, just because almost all of them go the same.
Like, different,
no,
like,
they're still
style,
different. They're
but
still
like,
different.
The pace has to be.
It's like. It's like Napalm Death. They reuse a lot of stuff, but they reuse it differently. You know what you're going to get with a Napalm Death song, but they do different things with it slightly each time. And that's my thing with the G1. This is not criticism, but I'm just saying the matches feel a little samey because, you know, sure, there's a couple sudden finishes if it's like a Yano match, but like, you know, first 5 minutes are slow, walking around, then they do some chops and they do some holds, then a couple Irish whips, then a slam or two, and then they tease a finisher, crowd goes, oh, then around 10, 15 minutes, they start going a little faster, but then it gets a little slow again, but it's
build
tense.
Up the drama.
Because they build up the drama, and because in New Japan they actually like have stamina and do storytelling with like being tired and built, and because all the moves get built up, you know, then around the 17 minute mark, then they start
usually
teasing finishers,
or like finishes happen depending
finishes
on what's
happen.
Here's the thing:
they
if
start
we're
doing
the
signature
a,
moves.
Like, here's the thing: like the semi-main and the main event usually tends to go close to like 20 minutes and then past 20 minutes.
And plus
minutes.
The first 5 minutes is always the same because that's when everyone like either does the spot where they do their pose, like when Naito does the lounge and the eye thing, or when Ospreay does the thing where he goes to chop someone, but then he just walks up to him and just pats their chest like, You know that bit?
Or he does the thing where he like hits the
he's
ropes
like,
and does a backflip
like,
and poses.
Yeah, exactly. So like in that sense, all the matches are still structured almost exactly the same almost every single time. But the wrestling's so fucking fire that you can forgive it for its mold because the matches are so good.
Oh, dude, yeah. So far, the 2020 G1.
Vince
I haven't
Russo's
finished,
liking it.
I haven't finished finished night two of the B block, but for sure, fuck, awesome matches. Shingo versus Jeff Cobb was sick. Suzuki versus
Brian and Dave
Suzuki
loved,
versus Ishii was fucking awesome.
Well, yeah, because that's Suzuki and Ishii.
Okada and like Ibushi wasn't fucking 5 stars, but it still was really, really good. It's
well,
like.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. It's like it's still pretty good, but it's like obviously they didn't go full nutbags. But I'm like, we got a whole tournament of matches that could go full nutbags. Osprey's looking way bigger, but still Osprey, and having some pretty solid handling. Like Osprey's match with Ishii was awesome. Dude, Jeff Cobb and fucking Shingo, that match was killer. With Jeff Cobb getting the fucking win, I was like, whoa, dude. So far, the earlier this G1, yeah. People kind of get wins that are weird.
Yeah.
But so far, it's been kind of like going back and forth.
Because they always do that.
Because usually you kind of get an idea of like a guy who's going to be running pretty hard with just consistent wins.
Yeah, in the way that, yeah.
But no one's like that unless it's fucking Jay White.
Yeah.
Or Yano. Yano's undefeated right now.
Or remember last year?
He fucking beat Sonata and Tanahashi. she?
Remember last year when Kenta was on the fucking tear?
Yeah, I know. He went and teared it till he got to fucking final boss Okada.
Okada.
And then got murked.
Because, of course, Okada's the only one that can beat him.
You at least got an idea. It's like, all right, Kenta, I feel like
Kazuchika's Cena.
I know. Like, Kenta's, he's kind of new. You can kind of tell he's going to be kind of running through, guys. But at least, when it comes to Okada, it's like, all right. Because Okada's been running through guys. Someone's got to lose here.
True.
And
but I'm just saying,
One's cash money.
Cash, Kazuchika, cash money, Okada.
All right. But yeah, so far at the moment of both the A block and B block going through basically four nights in and stuff. For sure, Naito versus Tanahashi was fucking awesome.
Uh-huh.
But dude, it's fucking Tanahashi is the fucking best. Dude, him dorking with Yano was so great. Bro, Yano did his fucking gimmick where he takes off the pads for the turnbuckles and stuff. Tanahashi catches it and he does a dragon screw on the turnbuckle and Yano flies. And then it's like, dude.
I didn't know Yano could do that.
Fucking Tanahashi knows how to just do the hammiest, awesomest shit. Dude, I swear, one of my favorite matches this year, I think might go down if I had a top 10 list. I think so far, Tanahashi versus Jericho at Wrestle Kingdom.
That was my God, you love that fucking match.
It was such a good
fundamental
wrestling match, but the hammy, funny shit that they do, because these are two very enigmatic characters.
Yes. Cheesy characters, too.
And believe me, when Jericho did this fucking air guitar and failed doing a frog splash, that's one of the best shit. Where he's trying to mock him, he's like, oh, what? You do your sick air guitar? Weedle, weedle, weedle. Does a frog splash and dies? It's like, dude, is that all you want? Is the fucking shithead to try to mock?
Dude, Wrestle Kingdom feels like a completely, it feels so much longer than 9.5 months.
Dude, and you gotta remember, that was two nights.
That
was a pretty exhausting show.
That feels like a different reality compared to what January was to what it is now. Because in January, COVID was starting to sneak into the DMs and Kobe died. And now we're in fucking pandemic lockdown shit.
Yeah. But man, dude, that Okada Ibushi
match. That Okada Ibushi match.
At Wrestle Kingdom Night 1. Fuck, yeah. Dude, that was an epic. Even Night 2 was solid. So far, yeah. That match, but how did you want shit? I haven't seen Naito versus Sabre yet. They go 28 fucking minutes too. So I'm like, what? Fuck, that's a long one. So I need to have 30 minutes of time to watch that. And supposedly Evil versus friggin' Yoshihashi.
Yoshihashi.
It was supposedly a killer match too. So I'm like,
Yoshihashi had a killer match?
With Evil. So I'm like, huh? I guess I'll try to watch
it. Evil and Yoshihashi. They're not bad wrestlers at all. I mean, I love Evil, but those are not, that's not a combination I would expect a great match from.
I'll put it this way. They're not the most charismatic characters.
Well, no, Evil has that fucking scythe, though.
Not anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he joined Bullet Club. He
fucking poser.
He betrayed his good buddy Naito. Years. He was Naito's first real friend.
I was genuinely upset when I found out he joined Bullet Club.
Yes, and he betrayed. Naito's longest friend betrayed him to join Bullet Club.
LIJ's literally the best faction.
Well, yeah, dude.
Suzuki Gun's cool. Even right now,
fuck, dude. They still got a sick faction.
Don't get me wrong. I always like Suzuki Gun, but most of that's just because I like Suzuki. And yeah, Chaos is cool because, you know, that's Okada's team and his boys. But, bro, LIJ... Los Incredibles literally have the best wrestlers,
dude,
and in its faction.
It's like, dude, oh fuck, dude, that faction's so heavy.
It's so fire,
dude. It's Naito.
Yeah.
You got Sonata, who's great.
Yeah.
Shingo, who's great. Hiromu, who's great. The only weak one is fucking Bushi.
Bushi isn't a bad wrestler.
He isn't bad, but compared to the other four guys, they're heavy hitters.
Oh, dude, I know. They're the best wrestlers in that whole thing.
Yeah, so I gotta go fucking off and mix this Men's Core project for seven stuff. I've been slacking.
I gotta go
something.
I'm probably gonna go listen to that Napalm Death record again.
I might do that again. I don't need to listen to the freaking Rowdy Graveyard. I already finished this podcast, The Catch Notes and stuff.
Yeah.
Literally, The Catch details of Brett giggling about the baby before he revealed it, and I didn't catch that. So it's good to
Are you watching their podcast to help your notes?
Here's the thing.
Let me tell you. Is that copying their homework?
Here's the thing. No, this is how...
Is this plagiarism?
No, this is how I, like, understand the show. I first watched episode once, not taking notes, just so I can have full focus and pay attention and prepare. So I watched it again, so I already know what's coming up, so I can already prep notes and get already have an idea and get notes of, like, some just solid talk points. But I might also throw the Reality Graveyards podcast on an episode just in case I didn't catch something that they caught. Because they like the show. And, like...
We don't.
Yes. So I'm sitting there and it's like, fuck. So how dare I come to this podcast well-educated in the matter I'm about to speak as best as I can, educate myself, and then talk about this fucking show. Dude, fuck.
You know what? Yeah, actually, how dare you? How dare you give that much of a shit about this show? You give a shit about this show.
No, I give a shit about this podcast.
That's funny. You don't give a shit about that show. You give a shit about this show, our show.
That's fucking right.
Hey, is that music I hear?
Why?
No, because you insert the music because this is the outro.
Whatever. Music man, me. Insert outro. This was the Dr. Death Danger Radio Show. I'm your host, James.
I'm Edward.
All right. Have a good one.
Adios.